Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, August 4th, 2016. With me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Good morning. I'm good. C'est moi.
Oh, yeah, I'll say anything I want. It's my show. Wait, that's not what you meant.
That's right.
Anyhow.
But nice try.
Why, thank you. It's good to have you here today. And I figured it was time for just like a more intimate conversation. So I wanted to have just you on.
And how cozy.
Yeah, so here we are. And I do have a couple topics for us. And the first thing that I want to talk about is this interesting phishing scheme that has cropped up. And by phishing, I mean with a PH, so trying to steal your credentials, your personal information, that kind of phishing scheme. And this one stems from having your iPhone stolen. And so the phishing scheme comes afterwards. So it's like salt in the wound. Not only is your iPhone stolen, but then the people that steal your iPhone try and get you to give up your iCloud credentials. So now they can hijack your iCloud account. And the way this works is that your iPhone gets stolen, and then the people that steal it figure out what your email address is, and then they send you a very well-crafted email that tells you that your iPhone has been located. And to be able to see where your iPhone is, you need to log into your iCloud account. And of course, you're not really logging into your iCloud account when you're doing that. You're actually giving the hackers your username and password for your iCloud account. And it looks legit-ish when you get the email, but it's a bad thing.
Let me put this in perspective a little bit. This is very nasty. It shows that you have to be very astute and very alert and careful about these things whenever you receive an email. And it is a testament to the ingenuity of the bad guys. But to put it in broader perspective, you got to remember that this happens very rarely. Not a lot of people are not, it's not massive. It's not something you should fret about that it happens all the time. It makes the news because it is so clever, and it's because we should be aware of these things. I remember we were in Panera Bread a couple months ago, and there was an iPhone on the counter just sitting there. We came up to place our order. I was eager to pay with my watch, as I do at Panera Bread with Apple Pay. Mm-hmm. And I saw an iPhone sitting next to the point of sale terminal. And I asked the clerk, I said, "Do you know whose this is?" She said, "No, I didn't notice it there before." And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I bet somebody left it there. Why don't you put it on the counter and wait?" So we make our purchase and we're walking out into the parking lot. And I see this woman jump out of an SUV and go running into the Panera Bread.
Yeah, you know exactly what she wanted, and it wasn't another sandwich.
And I turned to my wife and I said, "Yes, I know what she's doing." And then we were getting into our car, and we watched the exit, and there she comes out of Panera Bread with the phone in her hand. You know, and in my experience, people are pretty good about those things. I can't tell you how many times in my life I've seen people take care of each other and turn in things that they found and things like that. By and large, this happens. But what's interesting about this case is that it is so clever and so ingenious that it kind of alarms you into thinking that, oh my God, this is another thing in my life that I have to worry about. Well, don't lose your phone. Be careful. Watch out for phishing emails, especially when they look like they come from Apple. Mm-hmm. And be aware of these things and be well read and be a smart iPhone user. But don't feel like the sky is falling and that this very clever scheme is the end of civilization either. One has to keep perspective.
True. But, you know, knowing that people are creating these very clever scams to try and get your login information, It's the sort of thing we should be aware of.
That's just part of our everyday life, you know, just being smart about phishing.
Sure. It's to me, it's a lot like when you you park your car at the mall. You make sure that you don't have your iPhone just sitting out on the seat when you leave your car, which actually is in this case how the iPhone ended up getting stolen. It was left in the car. The window got broken out and the phone was taken. But you know, you don't leave valuables sitting out in your car. You make sure you've locked your car,
right?
And you do all these things not because you expect that everyone out there is going to want to break into your car, because the reality is most people don't care about your car. But for that one random time when someone is walking down between the cars grabbing door handles, you want to make sure that yours isn't the door that opens.
Right. And I think in the morning meeting we had, Brian detected a flaw in the phishing email. He said it was very, very good and could fool a lot of people. But often, if you look very closely and if you spend some time looking at these, you'll see problems. You'll see grammatical errors. You'll see technical errors. If there is an email that they want you to click on, you hover your mouse cursor over it to see if it really does go to apple.com or whether it goes someplace else. So it's worthwhile always to inspect these, to admire them and to evaluate them and look at them very closely. And also think about other ways that you can deal with a situation, like, you know, perhaps call Apple or check, find my iPhone and see where it really is. And we talked in the morning meeting about how sometimes the phone is turned off right away, so you can't do find my iPhone.
That's really common now. If your iPhone gets stolen, the odds that whoever grabs it is going to turn it off immediately is very, very high.
I wonder if there's some technical way to deal with that issue. Like, you know, there's even though the phone is turned off, when you power it down, the phone is still alive in some sense. It's just that the display is no longer chewing up power, but it's not completely off as far as I know. Isn't that right?
When you physically shut it off, I believe that the only thing that's still functional is the memory storage, and then whatever needs to monitor the physical switch for the iPhone, so it would turn back on, and also whatever's monitoring the data port, so that it knows if something's been plugged in, and then it turns back on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the radios are off, the screen is off, the microphones are off. Everything's supposed to be truly off.
Yeah, if the radios are off, that means the GPS system's off and there's no way to find it.
Right. So, okay, now here's the other thought I had about this this phishing email about, hey, your iPhone you reported lost we've located it and now you can track it. Why isn't Apple already doing something like that, where they're proactively telling you when your iPhone is reported as missing or stolen, that it's been located?
It could be because the pervasiveness of the problem is not sufficient that Apple needs to do that. As I was saying a few minutes ago, it could be that it's not a big enough problem yet. If it got to be a big enough problem, Apple would certainly deal with it. I mean, when phones were being stolen rampantly a few years ago, Apple introduced a lot of new security features that required you to have your Apple ID before you could reinstall and do some things. So I think if it got to be a blight, Apple would deal with it.
Well, considering what they've done so far, the likelihood that it becomes a blight, I think, is relatively low. So, but the big point is, watch closely when you get emails or text messages that purport to be from a company and you're not expecting them, and they are asking you to give up personal information, logins, things like that. Just watch really closely. Make sure that what you have received really is what it claims to be.
Yeah, that's great advice. And it's always pays to be slow and deliberate and say, well, let's think about this. No rush. Don't be alarmed by phishing emails. I mean, you don't know they're phishing emails, but when it looks like it could be, don't get alarmed. Don't say, I have to act fast. Ponder, think, inspect the email.
One thing that I do when I get the alert emails, like from my bank, saying we have to reset your password, someone tried to get into your account unsuccessfully, even though everything appears legit in the email that came from my bank, instead of clicking the link that they gave me to go in and log in and change my password, I open up a new web page, manually type in the address for my bank, or click the bookmark that I've already created for myself, mm-hmm. and then go into the system and change my password. And
I do that too.
Yeah,
that's great advice.
And I feel much more comfortable doing that, because if it's a phishing scam, when I get into my account, there's not going to be any alerts about someone trying to unsuccessfully get into my account. But in the case that happened just most recently with my bank, I logged in, and sure enough, the notice was right there in front of my face saying someone had tried to log in. I'm like, okay, great, changing the password just to be safe, and we're good.
You know, American Express is really good with phone support, and I'm sure a lot of banks are too. So often, you can just pick up the phone. And it's especially true in my experience with American Express, because they're so good at telephone support, and their phone number is printed on the back of every card. And recently, I tried to conduct a transaction, and it wouldn't go through. It turned out to be some sort of network issue. And we were wondering, well, why didn't the card approve? So right away, I pulled out my card, called the phone number on the back, and I said, have you seen any unusual activity, or is there anything wrong with the account? And they said, no, looks good. It's gold. So then we waited, and then eventually the charge went through. So sometimes it pays to pick up the phone and call your bank or call your credit card company.
Sure. Or call Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, just stay vigilant, people. Well, I'll do my best to have your back, but you have to be vigilant too. Okay, the other thing that I wanted to talk about today is the fact that the Olympics are about to start, the Summer Olympics in Rio. And most people, they have their cable TV subscription, so they're good to go, and they can watch whatever coverage they want. But there's a growing number of people like me that don't have a cable subscription anymore, because for whatever reason. In my case, I was paying far too much money for the couple channels that I wanted to watch. So I just got rid of the package. But that means that I don't have any direct way to watch the Olympics. So I have some ideas for people that will let you watch the Olympics without getting a cable subscription. And the first suggestion I have is, assuming you're in an area where you can pick up the over-the-air HDTV signals, get yourself an HDTV antenna and plug it into your television.
And unlike the old days where you had to have a TV or satellite subscription to get an operating DVR, recently there have been some, as a service to cord cutters, some companies, and I don't have a list handy. I should make a list and publish. But there are over-the-air cord cutter DVRs that allow you to connect to your antenna and do what a DVR does. You might have to pay a small subscription fee for a channel service, but they didn't exist before, and now there's several of them.
All right, so there you go. That's a way to be able to record content to watch later.
Right. And,
yeah, but the nice thing about the HD antenna, the one that I found that is rated really well and is really inexpensive, it's actually Amazon's own HD antenna, and it's like $18. So and since it's an Amazon product, it definitely qualifies for Prime. So if you're a Prime member, you can get their antenna for $18 shipped no problem. So that's one way to go. Also, you can watch other channels. So you can watch whatever you want, assuming it you have a channel for it. And so that, I think, is about the least expensive way to go.
It's TiVo Romeo. I think I pronounced that right.
Oh, yeah, TiVo Romeo.
Yeah, that's one of the more notable ones.
Yeah. Okay, Sling TV. That's another option.
Sling TV is on Apple TV now, right?
Yes. So you can watch your Sling subscription through Apple TV. They have an app for Apple TV, Amazon Fire, Google Chromecast, Roku, and Xbox One. So those are all options. And it's going to cost you $25 a month. But that $25 a month is going to get you most of the channels where the Olympics are going to be shown. So the deal is that NBC, which is in charge of, or has the coverage rights for the Olympics, they're showing the games spread across NBC, NBCSN, Bravo, USA, MSNBC, CNBC, and the Golf Channel. So for $25 a month, you can get NBC, NBCSN USA, and Bravo. And as long as you don't need to have the other sports related channels, then you're fine there. But
Sling TV uses what's called TV Anywhere, right? If you've currently got a cable or satellite subscription, you can use the Sling TV app to authenticate.
Sling TV will, if you're paying a Sling TV subscription, you can do that independently of a cable package.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, so that's one way to go. But still, $25 a month. And if you need to have the extra sports channels, which is an add-on bundle, it's called the Sports Extra Package, that's another $5. So that would make your Sling monthly subscription $30 a month. But, you know, if there's a lot of content you want to watch otherwise, there you go. You can do that.
That seems like kind of an annoying bundle thing where you're already back to the situation where you pay a flat fee and you get these things. It'd be nicer if you could just check the box and say, I want only these.
Yeah, well, I think we'll get there eventually, just not this year. Okay, along the lines of Sling, there's also PlayStation View. So if you're a PlayStation gamer and you have a View subscription, then you have access to NBC, NBCSN, Bravo USA, and MSNBC. Now, a PlayStation View contract is going to cost you $30 a month, so you're back to what you'd be paying for Sling. But if you already have a PlayStation and you have a View subscription, you're already paying for it. You have access to the Olympics.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay, so now less expensive options. YouTube has an Olympics channel, so there will be a lot of coverage there. And then the NBC Sports app runs on Apple TV, so you can get content directly from NBC Sports right on your Apple TV. Now, the downside to that is that you have to have a cable subscription to be able to authenticate so that you can watch the content.
That's that TV Anywhere thing.
Right. Alternately, it will also work if you're paying for PlayStation View or Sling. So they do tie into the View Anywhere or TV Anywhere thing on some level. Alternately, if you have a family member that's willing to hand over their login for their cable account, your cable company may not be happy with it, but it does get you in.
One of the things I've noticed in the past, and this may not be true anymore, but I suspect that it is that there's a different flavor when we use these alternative methods, unless you're going direct to NBC Live. The Olympic coverage has a tradition of sort of creating a competitive setting and doing lots of introductory material and sort of setting the stage for the competition. And you, it's sort of like they try to make you feel like you're being there as it happens, even so, even though it's on a video delay system. But you, the effort on network is to try to make you feel like you're participating, almost that you're in the stands and watching the drama of the event as it is. In the recent Olympics, I think it was London or the one before, I kind of felt like when I was logging onto the internet, I was seeing shortened summaries. It was like, you want to see this, and it kind of jumps right in, and it's the video, and it's rather sterile in a sense that there may be a different voice who's doing the voiceover of the competition, and you kind of feel like, well, I watched it, and yeah, I saw what happened, but you may not have had the same viewing experience in some cases. So that's something to watch for. Pick the experience you want as well as the price. In the avenue.
Okay, good point. And also that reminds me, NBCOlympics.com will be live streaming games. And you don't have to pay at NBCOlympics.com to watch content.
Are they live streaming in 4K?
They're live streaming on the web, so probably not in 4K.
Mm.
But they also have the complete schedule of everything at that website. So it's a good resource just so you can figure out what's going to be on when.
Yeah, because I've noticed a lot of times on network, there are obscure sports that sometimes don't get network coverage because, you know, diving and swimming and track and field is big. But if you are into judo or fencing, you have to sort of work hard to see what's going on there.
Sure. Yeah. Which is kind of annoying, but when you have over 2,000 hours of content that's going to be shown, it just gets tough.
Yeah.
Hey, we're out of time. We need to wrap up.
Boy, that went fast.
It always does. John, thanks so much for being here today.
You're very welcome.
It's always great to have you on the show. Listeners, it's always great to have you here too. And I look forward to this every day. So thanks for being here. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.